doubt we are all very familiar with the phrase that there is faith in numbers, power in numbers, and strength in numbers, and various elements of that kind of phraseology. But as we think about the word faith in numbers, we're going to twist that around just a little bit tonight, and we're going to take our primary study tonight from the book of Numbers, and we're going to look at faith not in numbers, because we're not talking about a numerical value or something like that, but we're talking about actually the book of Numbers, and how so many times in the book of Numbers, there's a demonstration here of faith that's not in this particular book. Now, as you look at the book, have a kind of a quick overview of about the first 9 or 10 chapters. You have the census there. You find out the population of the people is 603,000, I think 550 men. And yet, the people are needing to learn from that they should not put faith in that number of the men above 20, the fighting men or whatever it may be. And so God continues to instill in them and to teach them and wants them to learn about great faith, and that it is their faith and it is the God in whom they have faith will be the one to lead them and guide them. There's much in the very early part of the book of Numbers about stipulations concerning the Nazarite vow and how that would show dedication of someone to serve God very faithfully. There's more information in there about the Passover and how the children of Israel should live and behave, not only concerning the Passover, but also all the time and the kind of life that they should live. And if you look at the book of Numbers, the first 9, 10 chapters of Numbers, you see that there's some things being established and some things going on that are going to help the people as they kind of get their act together and they're ready to march into the promised land that God has led them out of the bondage, land of bondage toward. And you're really getting the impression here that they're off to a pretty good start. I mean, there's a couple little bumps here and there, but overall, those first 9, 10 chapters of Numbers, you get the impression these folks, that they've got overall a pretty good beginning. But as you look at the book of Numbers, kind of beginning at about chapter 11 forward, we learn something. We learn that it is not just important and significant to start well, but it's also very important that we end well. And as you begin to analyze the book of Numbers from about chapter 11 forward, you begin to see that these are people who, while they may have started well, they didn't end very well. They didn't understand that, and they didn't take that into their heart, and they didn't take that into their practice of life. And one of the remarkable things about the Bible is that God, through His Spirit, reveals to us not only the great moments of His people, but He has no qualms about also revealing to us the low points. And He shows us, and we are to learn, you know, 1 Corinthians 10 tells us, we look back at this time frame and we learn that these things were examples for us that we should learn from. And so we see that there's good things to learn, but tonight we're going to see a little bit about the lack of faith and the problem that occurred in God's people and why their faith was failing and why they had the problems that they did, and how is it that faith fails? How is it that faith does not do for us what it's supposed to do? It's not that there's a problem with God, it's not that there's a problem with faith itself, but what is it that I do? What is it that when faith is growing in me, or maybe not growing in me, what is it that happens that causes me to, maybe I started well, but along the way I get off track, I derail, and I don't end very well? Well, there are about 4 or 5 things that I want us to look at tonight in the book of Numbers where we see some of the causes of the failure of faith. Again, the problem's not God. The problem is man. And the problem in the book of Numbers was not God. The problem was man. And so let's now begin an analysis here, and this is obviously not going to be in tremendous detail, but here are about four or five areas in which we can ascertain the failure of faith and see why it didn't. And the point of doing that is so we can learn from those mistakes so that our faith will not fail us when we face circumstances where it's challenged. Because our faith is going to be challenged. Their faith was challenged. I mean, you know, on one hand, let's not, you know, be just, you know, so hard on the Israelites that we don't give them, you know, any benefit of the challenges that they had before them. I mean, they've been called out of the land. They were in the middle of the wilderness. You know, lots of challenges to their faith. But the problem was that they let those challenges get to them and break them down and kind of derail their faith. Well, you know, you and I are going to face challenges also. And we need to make sure that our faith doesn't derail like theirs did and it ends up being a failure and that we don't end very well when all is said and done. So, here are some things. Look at Numbers chapter 11. In Numbers chapter 11, here's the statement. Numbers chapter 11, faith fails. We're going to begin each one of these with those two words. Faith fails. Faith fails when it looks backward instead of upward and onward. Faith fails when it looks backward instead of upward and onward. When you look at Numbers chapter 11, and you begin at verse 4, and you begin reading, the mixed multitude who are among them, Numbers 11, verse 4, the mixed multitude who are among them yielded to intense craving, so the children of Israel also wept again and said, who will give us meat to eat? Now look at verse 5. We remember the fish we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, the garlic. You know how conveniently they also didn't say, and we remember how we were beaten half to death, and we remember how we had to make bricks, and we remember how awful the persecution was. They didn't remember any of that, did they? The faith was looking back. But now, verse 6, but now our whole being is dried up. There is nothing at all except this manna before our eyes. Who gave them the manna? I mean, you know, they talk about their whole being dried up. If God hadn't provided it for them, that would have been absolutely true. But God provided them food out in the middle of nowhere. And instead of looking upward and onward and the great blessing that they had, they look backward. And they're looking backward to bondage. They're looking backward to a terrible time in their life. And they are, you know, making it something that, oh, we miss it so much. We remember how good we had it. They didn't have it good at all. This was bondage. This was slavery. This was horrible. Do you remember what the Pharaoh was doing? He was seeing to the fact that if a male baby was born, he was thrown into the river. And they're saying, we missed that place. And we missed all the great things that were there. And as you keep reading in these next few verses, verse 7, the manna, you know, it describes the manna and how the people would gather it and the great blessing that it was for each and every one of them. But they're complaining and they're griping. And here, when we study this first point, that faith fails when it looks back instead of forward, what are the people doing here? They're complaining. And usually, when our faith is challenged, we will react one of two ways. We will rise up to the challenge, we'll look upward and onward, or, like these people, we look backward and we start to gripe and complain about our present circumstances. One of the number one characteristics, and I have to look at myself about this, and I imagine all of us need to look at our own selves. One of the number one characteristics of someone whose faith is not looking upward and onward is that they are a constant complainer. Now, I imagine every one of us, you know, gripe about a little bit of this or that every now and then. But we're talking about people who, in an attitude in which we are griping, we are complaining, we are negative, we even spit in the face of the blessings that we have. And we romanticize a place where we used to be that was really abominable. And we complain about the present. So, you know, I need to look at myself sometimes, and if I am a chronic complainer, if I am always griping about everything that's going on around me and everything that I have to put up with and everything that you know, I have to deal with, there's most likely a pretty serious problem with my faith. My faith is creating in me a spirit of negativity. My faith is creating in me a spirit of complaining. So faith fails when it looks backwards. Number two, faith fails when it looks for flaws instead of working together. Faith fails when it looks for flaws instead of working or faults instead of working together. Look at the next chapter, Numbers chapter 12. Numbers chapter 12. And in Numbers chapter 12, you have the siblings, Moses, Aaron, Miriam. Miriam's the oldest, Aaron is next, and Moses is the baby. But they're all, you know, past 80 at this point. And you have here an incident where Aaron and Miriam, as it says here, verse 1, spoke against, criticized, I got a footnote in my Bible that says, criticized Moses because he had made an Ethiopian woman. Now, without necessarily going into all the details about what all that means, I want you to look at what's going on. What's going on here is that Moses is being criticized by Aaron and Miriam because people are looking for flaws, people are looking for faults, and not trying to work together. I don't know, maybe they were jealous of Moses. Maybe there was some envy there. I'm not sure what their motivation was for criticizing Moses the way that they did here. But as you read the entire chapter, it's obviously unjustified. Because God defends Moses as his servant. And he punishes, you know, and brings punishment upon those who have criticized Moses of his brother and sister. And so we see here that when our faith, now again, I got to look at myself. If I am someone that goes, this is somewhat related to the first point, but it's a little bit different. Because in the first point, about looking backward, we're talking about concepts and themes and events and stuff that happens to me. Now with the second point, we're talking about how I treat people. And what does my faith do to me in my treatment of my fellow man? My family, physically, my family, spiritually, my fellow man. What does my faith guide me and direct me? How does it help me in my treatment of my fellow man? And we see that faith fails when it starts fault-finding and pointing out all the flaws and criticizing and once again complaining instead of trying to work together. So I have to look at myself, and you have to look at yourself, and is that what I'm characterized by? Is this the kind of life that I live? Do I look at my brothers and sisters in my family? Do I look at my brothers and sisters in my spiritual family? And am I constantly trying to just pick them apart? Am I constantly trying to fault find and point out all the problems and mistakes and the flaws that these other people have? I heard a man speak many years ago who said that when he grew up, that his family had a chicken farm. And he said that one of the hazards of being a chicken farmer is the casualties that you'd find out in the chicken barn every now and then. And there'd be a weak chicken, you know, among all these hundreds of chickens. There'd be a weak chicken out there, and the other chickens would begin to peck on him. This is animal behavior, but sometimes it's almost human behavior. And the stronger chickens will begin to peck on the weak chicken. And then they just sort of gang up on him. And they would literally peck him to death. So it's pretty, you know, awful. You know, when you had to go in, when your dad said, go clean that up. It's pretty bad. And it's sort of, you know, to think about. But sometimes, if I'm not careful, I can treat my fellow man that way. And just heck him to death. Because I'm a fault finder. I'm a critic. I try to look for all the flaws. That's a pretty heavy indicator. My faith is in danger. Faith fails when it looks for flaws and is fault-finding instead of trying to work together. Number three. Let's look at something else from the text. Let's look at the next chapter, chapter 13. And this one we probably are quite familiar with because this one is where Moses commissions these 12 spies, as most translations call them. You know, we might think that they were scouts, sort of, you know, to go out and search out the land, but they had to be very careful about it. You know, they couldn't just walk in and say who they were into the land of Canaan. But these 12 men, one from each tribe, was sent out for a period of 40 days to scout out the land of Canaan to bring back a report. And the people, you know, I guess are anticipating what's going to happen. You know, they come back with some of the produce and some of the reports about, you know, what we saw there and all that. And initially, it's something pretty big and it's something pretty exciting. But 10 of the 12, we know this story, but 10 of the 12 say, we can't do this. The people are too big. Their armies are too powerful. We are, as you look at the last verse, we are just like grasshoppers next to them, and they're just going to, you know, step on us and squash us. Well, here's the point. Faith fails. Here's those two words. Faith fails when it looks at the size of the problem and not the size of God. That's exactly what these men were doing, and they infiltrated the mind of almost everybody there. Faith fails when it focuses and spends too much time looking at the size of the problem and not the size of God. Our God is as big as He's ever been. Our God is still just as capable of handling any problem as He ever has been. He has not grown old. He has not grown sickly. He has not grown weak. He has not failed to keep up with new technology. He is not somehow incapable or irrelevant anymore. God is just as big as He ever was. The God who said, let there be light, and there was light. The God who spoke us into existence. The God who took a mud pie and breathed the breath of life into it and created you and me. And sometimes, because problems are big, okay, I'm not denying that. And I'm not denying that the report of these 10 men was inaccurate either. It was a big place, and there were big people there, and they were organized, and, you know, these people for many generations had just been slaves. And I can understand a little bit of the trepidation and nervousness that they might have in approaching the task that lay before them. But the problem was that they focused too much on the size of the problem rather than the size of the God who had brought them to this point already. Look at the nation of Egypt that God had brought down to the point that they just walked out. And the people, you know, gave them gold and jewelry and said, please go. God had done that. And if God could do that to bring them out of a superpower, God could do the same thing to take them into another superpower. And I'm not denying that problems sometimes can be intimidating. Problems sometimes can be scary. Problems sometimes can be big. And we have to wrestle with them. And sometimes problems, you know, don't have just a neat cut and dried answer. You know, it doesn't come neatly packaged in a box and we open it up and plug it in and put it on the shelf and boom, everything's great now. It doesn't work like that. But we have got to get a hold of ourselves enough that our faith will bring us to the point that instead of focusing on the size of the problem, as big, as challenging, as ugly as it may be, that we remember God is always bigger. God is always capable. Our God is able. And whatever it may be, God can do it. These people forgot that. And sadly, sometimes I forget. And so, let's not let our faith fail because we're too intently focused on the problem and its size, and we forget the size of God. Number four. Faith fails. These two key words. Faith fails when it looks for a human solution instead of listening to God. Again, all these are lessons that we're drawing out of the book of Numbers. But faith fails when it looks for a human solution instead of listening to God. There are two instances of that, one with the people and one with Moses himself. In this same chapter, the next chapter, Numbers 14, after God had brought some punishment upon Israel because of their lack of faith and because they listened to the report from the majority of the spies, and God brought punishment upon them, and Moses then was interceding for the people. When you get down toward the second half of chapter 14, you'll see that those 10 men, they died of a plague very quickly. And this is when the punishment is brought upon the entire nation of Israel, for those who are 20 and older, that they would all be forced to wander in the wilderness until they all died and a new generation took their place. And as you read Numbers chapter 14, you'll see that the reason God picked that number is because it represented 1 year for every day that the spies were in Canaan. So they were in there 40 days, so for 40 years, they would wander in the wilderness until they died. Well, when you get down to the very end of chapter 14, and now this is the illustration of the point about faith failing when it looks for a human solution. When you get down to the end of it, it says in verse 39, Numbers 14, 39, it says the people, they were mourning because of what had happened. They were upset because of all of this. And so they proposed their own solution, a human solution. And in verse 40, Numbers 14, 40, they say, here we are, and we will go up to the place which the Lord has promised, for we have sinned. Moses said, now why do you transgress the command of the Lord? For this will not succeed. Do not go up, lest you be defeated by your enemies, for the Lord is not among you. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites are there before you, and you shall fall by the sword, because you have turned away from the Lord, and the Lord will not be with you. Verse 44, that they presumed, key word, presumption. They presumed to go up to the mountaintop. Nevertheless, neither the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, nor Moses departed from the camp. Then the Amalekites and the Canaanites, who dwelt in the mountain, came down and attacked them and drove them back. You see, here's an instance where faith failed because it was looking for a human solution instead of listening to God. They had sinned, and through Moses' intercession, God had mercy on them, but they couldn't escape the consequences of their sin. That doesn't mean God didn't forgive them. That doesn't mean God hated them. But there are just certain consequences sometimes of our behavior that we can't undo, that we can't stop. It's irrevocable. That was the situation here. But they thought with their own scheming and planning that they could. But they couldn't, and they didn't. And so they were defeated. Faith fails when it looks for human solutions rather than listening to God. Now, that's an illustration from the people. There's an illustration from the life of Moses, too. In a few chapters later, number 20, you see that the people are complaining again, imagine that, and that they're upset because they don't have any water. Now I understand that if there are 603,000 men aged 20 and up, and you factor in wives and you factor in children, we're talking about at least 2 to 3 million people here. So you know, they're not upset because the water fountain down the hallway quit working. They are upset because they don't have a huge supply of water for hundreds of thousands of people. You got to get that kind of perspective on. There aren't any cities in Alabama that with a couple million people, but Atlanta, doesn't Atlanta have a couple million people? Imagine the city of Atlanta just overnight, all water supply was gone. We would hear about it. I'm sure. Well, that's kind of what was going on here. And so the people were upset. God had already provided for them water. God had already provided for them, you know, what they needed nutritionally and to be able to live. But they complained. And you may remember that first time that God did this during these early part of the wilderness wandering, that God told Moses to take his stick, his staff, and to strike the rock, and water would come out of it. And that's what he did. Well, on this occasion, though, remember our point here, this fourth point is that faith fails when it does what? When it looks for a human solution rather than listening to God. What did God tell Moses to do on this occasion? Instead of striking the rock, he said what? You get in front of the people, and you speak to the rock, and the rock will give water. Well, when we read in Numbers chapter 20, there's something pretty ironic that is spoken by Moses, and that is done. Verse 9, Numbers 20, verse 9, Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him, and Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, this is what Moses said, "Hear now, you rebels," and that becomes a very ironic statement made by Moses based on what's about to happen. "Hear now, you rebel, must we bring water for you out of the rock?" Remember what had God told him to do? Look up in the few verses prior to this. God had said, and you get all the people together, "Speak to the rock. Speak to the rock and it will give water." Then, verse 11, Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod. And water came out abundantly. The congregation and their animals drank. God still provided the water, even though Moses erred in what he did. That's God's mercy for the people. But he's not finished with Moses. I don't know if Moses was embarrassed to talk to a rock. I don't know if he just thought, you know, hitting it worked last time, so I'm going to do it again. And you almost get the impression, you know, it says specifically that he hit it twice. You get the impression that he hit it once and nothing happened, and so he hit it again for good measure. And then it did. But verse 12. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, because Aaron was there too, "Because you did not believe me." Remember what are the two words we're beginning every point tonight with? Faith fails. And God says here, what about Moses and Aaron's faith? It failed. "You did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel. Therefore, You shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. And Moses and Aaron would both die in the wilderness as well. The assumption is that prior to this, they were going to go into the promised land themselves. But not now. Because they look for a human solution rather than listening to God. And God said, you didn't believe me. And because you didn't believe me, you'll suffer some consequences. I must look at my own self to be sure that when God says what He says, that I listen to Him and don't try to interject my own human solutions. We see that in the religious world abundantly. Just one example is when Jesus teaches us in Mark 16, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. That's what God says. That's what the Son of God said. And yet we see so many faith-based groups, churches of different names and sorts and kinds in the denominational world who, instead of listening to God and simply doing what God says, they insert their own human ideas. And they bypass what God says. In essence, God could say to them, and sometimes God can say to me, you didn't believe me. There'll be consequences to follow. But now number 5, our fifth and final point we want to make tonight from Numbers 21, is that faith fails when it looks for what's missing instead of the blessings that are present. And in Numbers 21, the people are complaining again. Verse 4. Then they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way to the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom, and the soul of the people became very discouraged on the way. And then they began complaining again. The people spoke against God and against Moses. Verse 5. Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food, no water, and I so loathe this worthless bread. They were talking about the manna. So there's the complaint. There's almost every element we've studied so far kind of culminated right there in that one verse, in that one sentence. And the deal is, our fifth and final point is that faith fails when it looks for what's missing, when it looks at what's missing, instead of the blessings that are there. You know, we have already just read where God, you know, they said there's no water, but what had God had just done? He provided the water. You can read also in the book of Numbers where God provided them quails and meat like that. You can read, you know, as they say here, so despicably, that they're complaining about their food, that God's providing them food every single day. They didn't have to plant a garden. They didn't have to go spend the money at the grocery store and buy some overpriced, you know, special meat. They didn't have to go and do anything except every morning go outside with their container and gather up the manna to eat for that day. It's a better program than we got in this country. They just went outside and there it was. And God did that, by the way, for 40 years. By the time it was all said and done, it was billions of meals. You take 2-3 million people, 2 or 3 meals a day, times 40 years, you come up with an astronomical number. And God provided every single meal. They never had to plant a garden. All they had to do was go outside and pick it up. And what did they say? We loathe this. We can't stand this any longer. They were focusing on what was missing instead of the blessings right there in their very hand, in their very mouth, in their very stomach. It was despicable. And so God punished them. When you begin reading in this chapter that He sent a plague to them, and verse 6, of fiery serpents, and they bit the people, and many of the people of Israel died. That's a little bit of a wake-up call. And you begin reading in the next verse that they say, we've sinned. You know, they got the idea. They got the message. Sometimes God has to jolt us into reality. That's exactly what he did here. And this is the occasion where God told Moses in verse 8 to make a fiery serpent, and he made it out of bronze, and set it up on a pole, and so that everyone who is bitten, when he looks on it, shall live. So Moses made the bronze serpent, verse 9, put it on a pole so that it was, if the serpent had bitten anyone, when he looked on the bronze serpent, he lived. Now you talk about nothing at all but pure, undiluted faith. This is it. This was not medication. This was not, you know, any kind of medical procedure whatsoever. This was just, I got bit by a snake. Let me look at this bronze statue of a snake. And I'm healed. That's not rational. That's not logical. That's faith. Their faith had failed because they were insisting upon the things that they thought they were missing, rather than looking at the blessings they had right in front of them. God jolted them awake with the plague and the punishment of the poisonous snakes. And in so doing, he created a scenario where they had to demonstrate faith exemplary. They had to take God completely at his word. If one of you ran in here and you said, I just got out of the car and I stepped on a copperhead and it bit me 3 times on the ankle and I'm suddenly feeling pretty bad right now, and I said, well, here, look at these keys. Just look at these keys and you'll be fine. Man, if you didn't die before you killed me, you'd kill me. You would be so unhappy and upset about that, you would think I was an absolute fool. Moses told the people, your faith has been terrible. God's punished you for it. But by the very mercy of God, he'll save you anyway in spite of yourself if you'll just look at this bronze serpent. And in faith, they did it. And they were healed. And what God offered them here was physical healing. The Son of God came many years later to offer something even greater. Because you see, the problem in Numbers 21 was caused by sin. The problem was caused by sin and a lack of faith. And God gave them physical healing. Our problems are caused by sin. And the Son of God offers us spiritual healing. John chapter 3, beginning at verse 12. This is Jesus speaking, if I have told you earthly things and you do not believe, how will you believe if I tell you heavenly things? Jesus says, I'm going to tell you something spiritual. I'm going to tell you about something that's greater than the earth. I'm going to tell you about something spiritual. Verse 13, no one has ascended to heaven but he who came down from heaven, that is the Son of Man, who is in heaven. And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so the Son of Man must be lifted up, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. Here it is. Don't let your faith fail. Understand that Jesus Christ died for you on the cross. He was lifted up for us to die on our behalf for our sins, not to heal us physically, but to heal us spiritually. And our faith fails when we refuse to look at that cross the same way if someone was bit by a serpent in the wilderness during the days of Moses. If they didn't look at that snake on the pole, they died. If we refuse to look at the cross, and we refuse to listen to the one who's hanging on it, and we refuse to do what he says, and we refer back to what we did a few moments ago in Mark 16, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved, that our faith has got to bring us to that point that we do what God says. You see, those Israelites, their faith had to bring them to the point that they did what God said. They looked at the bronze snake. Our faith must bring us to the point that we do what the Lord says. We repent of our sins. We are baptized in His name. And we live faithfully for Him the rest of our lives. Faith fails every day because people hear those things and don't do them. Don't let your faith fail. Do what the Lord says. We extend the invitation of Jesus tonight for anyone here who needs to become a Christian, for anyone here who needs restoration, for anyone here who needs prayers, that your faith not fail. For whatever challenge you may face, would you come tonight to stand and we sing.